I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. How's it going today? I'm going to be talking for the next half hour, and then I'm going to bring up a guest, James Asprey, in about a half hour, and we're going to talk about his year of not talking. And I think that's going to be really, really an interesting time. Can you imagine? Not talking for about a year. For a year, exactly. There's a lot we can learn from that, and we'll discover what he learned coming up in a little bit. It's fall. It's not fall yet, but we have another week of summer, but the cool air is coming through. I've even got a sweatshirt on, which is fun. And I bought a new teapot. To me, fall is about being comfortable either in your leisure time or during work and getting a little cozy and drinking tea. And I've just got a new teapot. Now, I've mentioned a number of times how I'm really anti-tea bags for lots of reasons. And I like to use bulk tea in teapots that come with these lovely little baskets that you can put the bulk tea in. And that way you could make it as weak or as strong as you like. And you don't have all of that environmental waste of paper or nylon that they use in some of the fancier tea bags. And I just got this cute little teapot. I love in. Okay, start again. I'm so in love with it. I think I might buy another one because this one is so particularly cute. But I always have to see how they hold up because we go through tea kettles and teapots a little too quickly, which is why I go with stainless now because I tend to break the porcelain pots, unfortunately. Yeah, so if you go to my What Vegans Eat blog, you can see what my new teapot looks like because I posted it yesterday and today. Another thing I want to share with you may remember John Joseph. I had him on years ago. He wrote a book. Please excuse me if I offend you by saying his title, but it's called Meat is for Pussies. And the title is actually offensive to many people. But what I like about him and his work is he appeals to a very specific demographic. He's had a very challenging life, and he's come out of it really miraculously, and a hero with a wonderful message. And he's just been featured in a great video. You might go to munchies.vice.com and check out the Fuel the Vegan Iron Man Diet of Cro-Mags John Joseph. Oh yeah, he's also a punk rocker of the group Cro-Mags. It's not my kind of music, but some people like it. And you know, I don't really care what kind of music or what people do for their entertainment, as long as they don't hurt anybody. All I care about is eating plant foods, that we should all eat healthy, delicious plant foods. I can't say it's all that I care about, but you know that it's really important to me. So you might check out munchies.vice.com for that really inspiring video. One of the things that it made me want to do is work out more. And we could always use a little inspiration to work out more, don't we? Couldn't we? Now, today is starting at sundown here in New York, is the Jewish holiday Yom Kippur. I can't say how many times I said it on the show. I am not a religious person. I like holiday parties and food. And this particular holiday is not really about food until the holiday is over, because during this holiday, you're supposed to fast from sundown to sundown, and I do not plan on fasting, but I want to talk about fasting. I thought it would be a good topic to talk about. We touch on it from time to time. This show is called It's All About Food. Well, what happens when you abstain from food, and why would you want to do that? Folks that are doing it during this holiday, it's what I was told originally when I was going to religious school when I was a little girl, is that people are supposed to be so wrapped up in their prayers for forgiveness, their prayers for what all this holiday is about. It's the Day of Atonement, where we ask for forgiveness for all the things that we've done that we shouldn't have done or made mistakes during the year, that you're so wrapped up in these thoughts of prayer that you don't have time to eat. And I think most of the people that I know, they're thinking about eating most of the day while they're not eating. They're not that wrapped up in the concept of forgiveness. And fasting can be a wonderful, wonderful thing. And there's different kinds of fasting. There's the popular juice fast that many people will partake in. And I think juice fasts are great, but I don't really think they're fasts. I think they're just a very simple way to get nutrients, which is very light on your digestive system and can help cleanse and can help alleviate a lot of different problems. Fasting is really when you abstain from food, and water fasting is the true type of fast, where you're not eating any food, but you are drinking water as necessary, because it really isn't healthy to go without water. Water is really important, and it's an important part of fasting. You know, the essential thing that we have in life, number one, is we must breathe. And as soon as we stop breathing, the game's over. And then after that, it's taking in water. We absolutely need water. And of course we need nutrients, but water takes priority in terms of how long we can go without it. So you may not know this, but Dr. Joel Fuhrman, who I've said many times is my favorite doctor and has written some wonderful books about food and eating and his famous Eat to Live diet, his first book was about fasting, called Fasting and Eating for Health. And anyone who might be curious about fasting or thinking about whether they should or should not fast, I really recommend this book, Fasting and Eating for Health. I really enjoyed it when I read it, which was sometime like around 1999-ish, 1998. I don't remember when it came out. But I was fascinated by it, and it didn't ultimately lead me to do a 3-week water-only fast. I did it mostly out of curiosity. Some of my family and friends thought I was a little nutty at the time. And, you know, just like we're going to talk about not talking later on, not eating for a substantial amount of time really opens you up to learning a lot of things. And during a fast, when you're not eating, the one key thing that's necessary, other than not eating and drinking water, is resting. It's really not advised to have a prolonged fast and continue normal activities. When I did my 3-week water-only fast, I was a bit of a chiseler. You had the opportunity to go to Dr. Fuhrman's fasting center, and I really couldn't afford to do it for 3 weeks. So I fasted at home for about, I think, 10 or 11 days. And during that time, I didn't slow down that much. I had a lot of energy and I was feeling pretty good. It was actually over Thanksgiving, and I made a Thanksgiving dinner for a few people. That was the early part of my fast. I didn't eat anything. And that was kind of a fun thing to do. Make a lot of food, not taste it, and then serve it. But that fast, the key part was the resting portion of it. So when I was at the fasting center, which he doesn't have anymore, there was a lot of time for self-reflection. I would go on walks, and my metabolism was so slow at this point that I felt like I was in slow motion, or everyone else was in like super speeded up, fast forward kind of motion. As I walked along, everyone was moving at a much more rapid pace. But this is an opportunity for your body to focus on areas that need healing. And there have been some miraculous stories about people that have been in health crises and have done water fasting and have healed themselves. Dr. Fuhrman has his own personal story. And so when we're talking about a day fast during a religious holiday, there are things that I think people should consider, and they don't. Very often people think if they go on a fast for a few weeks, they'll lose a lot of weight. And it's true, you do lose weight. But the ideal way to fast for anyone who's doing a day fast or any length of time is you want to be eating an ideal healthy diet before you fast and to continue with a very healthy diet after you fast. If you think the fast is going to clean some things out and then you go back to a toxic diet, that's not healthy. That can be really damaging. And I know people who have spent the money, gone to one of these fasting centers, lost a bunch of weight, and then gone back to their regular unhealthy diet. And what happens? Not only do they put on the weight again and probably even more, but they're probably doing themselves some harm. So before you go into a fast, you want to be eating well. You want to, and maybe even you want to ease into it by eating particularly cleanly before you go into a fast. I have to admit that I did very well during my 3-week water-only fast, but some years later I thought I would try another fast just on my own for a few days. In Dr. Furman's book, he recommends a long fast once every 5 or 10 years, and I didn't follow up with something like that, but I thought I might try it. And I wasn't being careful, and I had like a big Thai dinner before the day I was going to fast. And I could not do the fast as long as I wanted to, because that Thai dinner, which was rich and full of, starchy rice noodle stuff and fat and oils, that kind of just got stuck in my intestines, and I could not continue a prolonged fast. You need to have a lot of hydrated food with lots of fiber so that it's going in and coming out. And then when you're ready to fast, your body is prepped for a fast. Now, some people find that a prolonged fast is scary and it's not something that they want to do or can do because of their schedule. And fasting once a week has shown to be very, very positive for many people. And there's even some evidence that those people who are going through chemotherapy will have a better impact or better results with the chemo if they fast the day before they have chemotherapy. So there's a lot of fascinating things about fasting. People often think, you know, if they're tired, they need to eat, or maybe they're not eating the right food. And I think for most of us who are fortunate to be able to eat whatever we want, whenever we want, the problem is probably too much food or not the right choices. And so when we're tired, we don't need more food. We need to sleep. Or maybe we need to eat different foods that are energizing rather than foods that slow us down. Things to think about for fasting. Now, let's get back to eating food, because that's really the fun part. And I wanted to talk about some of the foods that I was fortunate to enjoy this week. So just yesterday, for example, we were thinking about the restaurant Beyond Sushi. I think I've mentioned that a few times. It's a relatively new restaurant. It's been around a few years here in Manhattan. I'm not sure if they've branched out yet to other places, but they make some great hand rolls and vegetable maki and sushi. It's all vegan. And in addition to just white rice, like you'll get in most Japanese restaurants, they'll use black rice and red rice and a number of other grains and some wonderful sauces, like different flavored vegan mayonnaises that you can use to dip or enhance the different items that you're buying. So we thought last night that we'd kind of make our own. And I had some tri-colored quinoa, red, black, and white. And I used that to make our maki. And thanks to Gary, I said, we got to make one of those good-tasting mayos that, or aiolis that they have at Beyond Sushi. And he did just that. He made, wow, this great spicy aioli. And I posted the recipe for you today, should you want to try it. And it's great. It's great for anything that calls for mayonnaise or an aioli, for dipping. You can spread it on bread when you're making a sandwich. Of course, you can use it for vegetable maki. And it's not hard to make. And, oh, it's good. And he made enough so I can have more whenever I want. And then we went to the Veg News, what did they call it? The Veg News Comfort Food Shindig. I don't know if any of you are subscribers to Veg News Magazine. I'm sure you are. You may know that Veg News went through some difficulties. I spoke with Colleen Holland a few weeks ago, who is the publisher of Veg News. And boy, vegans know how to party. Let me just say that. We love our food, and we love having a good time. And this party was at Mooshoes, which is a vegan shoe store in Manhattan. And they are so generous there. Erica and Sarah Kuberski, the owners of this store, have hosted many great events, book launches and other vegan events. And we were at this Veg News party. Jay Astafa, who is this young celebrity chef, was making little treats for us, like little mini cheeseburgers and fries and vanilla shakes. And my favorite was the mini grilled cheese with creamy tomato sauce served in a shot glass. That was fun. And Vegan Treats offered up so many stunning desserts. It was quite a party. And then we were given goodie bags filled with all kinds of wonderful foods that I don't normally buy because, I don't know, I'm not someone who buys the treats very often. And if I want to have a treat, I usually make it. But if you look at my What Vegans Eat blog, what day was it? I think it was number 219. You can see all the goodies that we got in our goodie bag and some of the people who were there at that party. It was major fun. What else is in the news? I wanted to mention, when we eat, for example, any food that comes from a grocery store, food that comes from a restaurant, food that comes packaged to go, in a convenience store, wherever, it's always a leap of faith. We really need to trust where that food came from every step of the way. And we want to believe that the companies that are producing this food take care in keeping their facilities clean and buying quality products. And we have a government that inspects along the way to make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. And there's all kinds of rules to follow. And we just take a leap of faith and assume that these rules are being followed. Well, if you follow what's going on with foodborne illnesses, you can realize how much of a leap of faith you're taking every time you eat in a restaurant or eat food where you haven't followed it every step of the way and checked it every step of the way. And, one of the big foodborne illness-related cases was just resolved yesterday. I don't know if you remember the story about the salmonella-tainted peanuts that sickened 714 people and killed 9 in the year 2009. One of many foodborne illness cases, well, it was a particularly fascinating one because the people involved, Stuart Parnell, his brother Michael, and an employee, Mary Wilkinson, were all served yesterday. Stuart Parnell, 28 years in prison, his brother Michael, 20 years, and the employee, Mary, to 5 years. And they were involved and realized they knew that they were shipping salmonella-tainted peanuts. And where it gets complicated, and this is where efficiency comes in, and this is one of the reasons why I don't like the word efficient, or being efficient, and thinking of efficiency as an important parameter. In some ways it is, but what do we lose when we try to be very efficient in business, when we merge companies, when companies get so large, it's really impossible to keep track of where things come from. So if you have a company that makes a particular product that needs peanuts, for example, and they buy peanuts from a variety of sources, and then they blend them up and cook them up and extrude them and put them in packages, it's really hard to tell where the problem started when you have salmonella lurking in your food product. And I would prefer to see, in addition to better inspections and better ways to keep people honest, that companies could be smaller when it comes to making food. Companies should be smaller, locally sourced. This big corporation thing, especially when it comes to food, it can be very, very dangerous. And this is just one small story out of many. But the good news is that justice was served. And these particular people didn't get away with it. And I think that we're going to be seeing more of that. And you hope that this is a deterrent for food manufacturers so that they work very hard at keeping the bad bugs out of their food. Let's see. What else do we have here to talk about? Yeah. I talk about bowel movement sometimes on this show, right? The thing that's amusing, interesting, I think most people realize this when they change their diet and when they start to incorporate healthier foods in their diet. One of the first things they notice is what happens when it all comes out the other end? Because things change. And anytime you change your diet, and it can be adding good foods to your diet, it could be adding bad foods to your diet, your bowel movements are going to change. I always like to tell the story that I went to a raw food conference in Costa Rica about a little over 10 years ago, and the food was so full of oils and nuts, was so rich, that I actually became constipated, which you wouldn't think is what would happen when you're eating raw food. But the diet changed, and it was challenging for a few days. So I like to talk about bowel movements because they're really important, and they let you know how healthy you are. I can't imagine going a day without moving. And I think two foods, for me, that are really powerful in keeping my intestines scrubbed are oats, and which is one of the reasons why we eat a lot of oatmeal here at home for breakfast. Not every day, but many days. And other than the fact that we love it, but it's also really a good scrubber. And lentils. Wow. I love lentils. I love their flavor. You can do many, many things with them. You can put them in a puree. You can put them in a soup. You can put them in a loaf. But no matter how you eat them, they keep you clean and they keep things moving. Now, fiber is a really important thing to keep things moving. And rather than taking fiber from a jar and mixing it with some water, thinking you're going to get the fiber you need, fiber is best from food, and fiber is the most delicious from food. And, you know, it just boggles my mind that this food that we eat, these wonderful plant food dishes, they are delicious, they are nutritious, they keep things moving, they keep you energized, and yet it's taken such a long time for people to get on this wagon, this plant-based food wagon. Come on, it's fun, it's delicious. And it'll take you a long way deliciously. I really believe that. I really believe that. Let's see. I just wanted to mention one more thing before we take a little break and then bring on my guest. And that's just a simple little message about Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola, the CEO last month promised that he would make Coca-Cola's funding transparent. And they have done that. And you might visit the Coca-Cola website. They have a number of different pages, frequently asked questions, and they tell you who they have partnerships with and who the scientists are working on their research, and they tell you who they're funding, and they say they will continue to update every 6 months. And okay, that's very nice that they're being transparent, only I don't think anything's going to change, because who has time to look at these sites and make the connection that the people that they're using to do research are also supporting their agenda? They say, and this is just an amusing thing to me, amusing, sad, they say, I don't have the exact wording, but there's a one piece in one of these transparency pages where they say that they're concerned about obesity and want to work getting people to reach their ideal weight. And they say that they will do it. They do it already by offering low sugar and no sugar beverages. And that's amusing to me, because aspartame actually encourages your appetite. It increases your appetite. People that are drinking these no-calorie beverages, thinking they're not getting any calories, are made hungrier. And these companies know that. Yes, they know it. So I'll leave you with that little thing to digest for a moment. And we'll take a quick break and then be back to talk with James Aspey of Voiceless 365.
PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Normally, you would hear the Progressive Commentary Hour Monday evenings, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. However, as of today, we're going to be having it every Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. So just change your calendar, please. Change your schedule. Tuesday, 7 to 8 for the Progressive Commentary Hour.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. It's part two of It's All About Food, and I want to bring on my guest. James Aspey is a 28-year-old vegan animal rights activist from Sydney, Australia. In 2004, he embarked on an unprecedented and life-changing challenge. James took a 365-day vow of silence to raise awareness for animals and promote peace over violence. He did this while traveling around Australia and also while cycling 5,000 kilometers from Darwin to Sydney in his popular campaign, Voiceless 365, and then ended his vow live on Australia's most popular morning TV show. And now he's sharing what he's learned with the world. And you can find out more at jamesaspey.com.au. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Karen. How you doing?
Good. Thank you for starting your day early to talk to us over up here in New York as you're down there in Australia.
I actually started it early yesterday because I thought it was yesterday. So it's 2 days in a row now.
Okay. Gosh, I'm sorry about that. Well, that's because it's Wednesday. It's Wednesday for you, right?
Yeah, and I always struggle to keep up with what day it is. My weekends and my weekdays all blur into the same thing, really.
Yeah, well, it's all made up.
Well, that's true. That's true. It's this moment.
And there is no time.
Time is but an illusion.
Yes, but in order for us to have these programs, we have to have a method so that we know when we're going to talk to each other.
Does make it a bit easier.
Great. Okay. So you have quite a story, and we're going to touch on some of that today. I was actually watching earlier the video of your first words after not talking for 1 year.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I've been thinking a lot about choices, and many of us are fortunate to have so many choices, and we don't even realize what our choices are as we whine and moan and complain about all the things that we want and don't have. Whereas if we just shifted a little perspective and realized, wow, we have so many, so much, our lives are so rich.
We really do. I say that in every talk I do.
And this is a little bizarre. I was just talking about bowel movements, so why don't I just keep with the potty talk? I wake up most nights and I have to go to the bathroom. And most of the time I wake up and I think, oh, I don't want to get out of bed. I'm tired. It's so warm and cozy. And oh, I don't want to do this. And I get up and then I feel better. Well, last night I woke up. And as I was going to the bathroom, I thought, wow, I'm so lucky to be able to do this. I have freedom and I can take care of whatever it is that I need to take care of in a moment. And then I think about those who are imprisoned, humans and non-human animals who don't have that kind of freedom or luxury to do the simplest or for the simplest basic needs.
That's something I've never actually thought to be grateful of, that I could use the bathroom in the middle of the night. I'm the same. I'm always like, oh, I don't want to get out of bed. Why did I drink so much water before bed? But yeah, that's a great point. We just have to walk a few meters and be able to do that, which for some people and definitely for non-human animals stuck in their cages, you know, they do not have that luxury. I think it's pigs that they actually they kind of make their own like spot to go to the toilet when they're, you know, out in the wild, and that they'll do it away from their bed. And I mean, the pigs that are kept in sow stalls and those cages, for example, they don't have that opportunity to be able to do what they would in nature. They have to defecate right where they stand and where they lie and where they do everything, because they're in a cage so small they cannot even move. And that's the vast majority of pigs who are killed for the vast majority of pork products that us humans, or some of us humans, most of us humans, are still consuming.
Yes, and there are so many bacon lovers out there that just celebrate the privilege of eating bacon. And it's very difficult because, as you probably know, in-your-face vegan activism, screaming at someone and telling them what to do, is something that doesn't work. And although you may want to shake them and slap them around, it's not effective. But that's what I want.
I guess for me, I think, you know, perhaps it has its place. And although do I think it's the most effective way to create change? Well, no, I definitely don't. But then again, I do think that there's some people who, for example, my personal method, which is coming from a peaceful, respectful, understanding place, I'm sure there's some people out there who that won't resonate with. And some people do need to be yelled at for them to, you know, respond and go, oh, hang on a second. But I agree. I think that type of activism is going to be effective for a minority, where the vast majority of people, in my opinion, are going to respond to an approach that is, I think, I have this quote which I like to say, and it's, don't blame and shame, inform and explain. And just by telling people the facts, which most people have never even thought of before, and teaching them, you can survive and thrive, and not even survive, but be healthier on a whole foods plant-based diet and live longer and reduce your chances of so many diseases while saving so many animals' lives, you know, not putting animals into such pain and torture and exploit them or kill them for food and products we don't even need, and it's better for the environment, and we can save all the, you know, there's so many people starving every day of hunger. We can do so much just by going vegan. And like you were talking about a minute ago, you know, having luxuries and having the choice to be able to do so much, we have everything we could ever want. We have so much, and then we have so much more. I mean, we have all the basic necessities. We always have, you know, we can drink out of our taps. We get food out of the fridge. We've got a place to sleep that's undercover. We have all the base needs, and then we have on top of that just so much more. We are so blessed and so lucky. I mean, isn't the least we could do, the very least we could do, stop enslaving and exploiting and killing innocent beings who feel pain and suffer just like us for food and products that are easily avoidable, that we don't need at all? And that is really an abuse of our power, of our, I don't know if you even call it privilege, an abuse of our, of what we can do. I mean, of our, we dominate, you know, rather than try to live in harmony. And I mean, clearly it's not working. You know, we've got a epidemic of disease and illness. The world is, you know, the planet is being destroyed, and we're taking along 1.5 trillion innocent beings with that. You know, we're killing them every single year. So things need to change, and that starts with each and every one of us.
Each and every one of us. And for those of us who are there, it's so hard to understand why others haven't joined us yet, especially those who know about what's going on. But it's for some reason, it's hard for people. I can't speak really too well of that difficulty, because I gave up eating meat when I was a teenager, and I've been doing it for decades. So it's just hard for me to understand. It's easy. I've been doing it all my life practically. And why can't you do it?
It's definitely easy. I think I understand a little bit why. And I think it's because mainly of all the lies we've been told and have believed for our entire life. I mean, for me, just particularly on animals and their sentience, you know, I have been racking my brain. I didn't used to care about animals really at all, and I've been racking my brain. Why is that? Why didn't I care about them? And I've just kind of figured it out, and it's because I didn't think they could care about themselves. I didn't think a chicken had the capacity to care about his or her own life. So why would I care about their life? You know, that's what I thought. And then there's the lies, you know, we need calcium from dairy, we need protein from flesh. There's free range. There's this humane way to kill someone who wants to live, you know, that's humanely slaughtered. And we believe that, like, we believe so many lies because that's what's fed to us from when we're young. We have to eat animals to survive and be healthy. And I think an important part is just getting, like, for helping someone go vegan, which is what they really want to do inside, because almost everyone is against animal cruelty and hates animal abuse and wants to be a good, positive, kind, loving person. So you're not convincing anyone to do anything they don't want to do. You're just helping them realize why what they're doing now isn't in alignment with where they're at, and then help them get rid of all the myths and all the lies they believe by telling them one by one, actually the calcium, you know, you can get calcium from all kinds of different foods, and consuming dairy products is actually acidic and leaches calcium from your bones. And you can explain that the world record holding strongman is a vegan, so he's obviously not having a problem from about not getting enough protein. And I mean, just that's what I think is important, just helping people, you know, cross each and every one of their myths or lies off. And when you've done that, because the best thing is about being vegan, or one of the best things, is that there is an answer to every single one of these lies. So when you learn them and you can help other people by teaching them the truth as well, by the end of that, like, you know, you only might be able to get a few excuses or a few lies done each conversation you have. But whatever, you just do what you can do. And in the end there, when they've got no excuses left, or they've been told the truth about everything they didn't realize before, veganism is the only thing that starts making sense. And then you go, well, I mean, why aren't I doing this now? This seems better in every way, which it is. And I think that's when people start going, okay, this is definitely something I'm going to consider or move into now.
You mentioned that at first you weren't aware, or you didn't acknowledge that animals had feelings and they could think, and so you weren't relating to them in any way. When we were talking about pigs urinating in their stalls, they're very sensitive to smell, and it's painful for them to live in these confined environments with so many other pigs because of the odors. And it's just something that, I don't know, do the farmers acknowledge this? They must know, but they don't seem to care.
Well, I mean, that's probably right at the bottom of their list of things to care about when it comes to pig farming.
Yes, I think making money.
Yeah, that's right at the top there. And I think, you know, when we're valuing profit over somebody's life and someone's well-being, I mean, we've made a serious problem somewhere along the way. You know, there is no taste more valuable than somebody else's life. And that's what we're doing. Every choice we make that's a choice that isn't vegan, we are valuing our own comfort, our own taste or pleasure or entertainment over somebody's life. I mean, and I guess when you really realize that and you realize what you were doing, well, it hits home, and that for me, that's why really what I spend most of my time doing now is trying to help people, you know, live in alignment with the kind, peaceful, respectful person they are. Because I think, I mean, being vegan is so easy for us, yet for them, those small changes we make to our everyday life, which are so easy to do, that has just such an incredible positive effect on the animals and the planet. And I mean, how could we not do something so easy, which stops so many beings from being in such suffering and such sadness and misery? And yeah, it's one of the greatest things you can do, and it happens to be one of the easiest things you can do.
James, you don't seem to have any problem talking. You seem to have a lot to say, and it's all good.
Yeah.
How is it that you took a vow of silence?
Oh, it was so hard, honestly. Well, it started, I took a 10-day vow of silence for a meditation called Vipassana, and that's where I had the idea to do a vow of silence for a year. So when I started the vow of silence for a year, I communicated with writing things, and then I met someone who does sign language, and I noticed that they communicated also by using their mouth without words, but they made the mouth movement, you know, how you would, as if you were speaking, and that's kind of how I communicated. But I was expecting it to get easier throughout the year. You know, I thought I'd get more used to it, I'd figure out other ways of communicating. It actually harder and harder and harder right up until the end, because I was learning more and more. Like, I was a really new vegan. I went vegan the day I started my vow of silence. You know, I was kind of still, I used to say slipping up, but it wasn't slipping up. I was deliberately choosing animal products on occasion before that. And I decided, that's it, I'm done now. So when I did my vow of silence, so as I took that year of science, I was learning more and more and more about, you know, some of the things we're talking about, which made me have more to say and want to express this more to everyone I came into contact with. And it was a really, really, really challenging thing, actually. And I was just so happy it was over by the end there, because I wanted to just start being able to talk and use my voice, which is a far easier way to and more effective way to communicate. But as well, taking the vow of silence, I mean, that raised a lot of awareness. Like throughout the year, every person I came into contact with, they wanted to know, why are you voiceless? And I wrote my blog, you know, every day or so, on Facebook and on online, which thousands of people were following. But the real awareness raising happened when the interview I did on television, when I spoke for the first time with a very clear vegan message, you know, to the world, which I spent 10 days in meditation, again, figuring out exactly what I wanted to say. And that interview spread all over the world. And it was shared thousands and thousands of times. And I caught just two of the shares that had a large number of views. And one was 250,000 and the other was 780,000. So that was just two views out of thousands of shares. I mean, two shares out of thousands of shares. And that had been seen over a million times. So who knows how many times it's been seen altogether. But, I mean, not having my voice for a year gave me a voice that, you know, potentially millions of people listened to for that 3-minute interview. And what I said in that 3-minute interview was very clear, was very direct. If you love animals and you're against animal cruelty, then by your own beliefs, you're morally obligated to become vegan, which is easy and healthy and happens to be delicious.
When you were doing that show and you were speaking for the first time in 1 year, you could see how moved you were on your face. And I know that when I talk about animals and factory farmed animals, I can get choked up very easily because I tend to, I know the horrors are out there, but as soon as I express it, it's a very emotional thing for me that I kind of have to push back down inside me. So you had a number of things going on. First, you were on national television and mm-hmm. big audience, and you hadn't spoken for a year, and plus you were talking about this terrible situation that we're in. What was going on inside you?
Well, the main thing, I mean, yeah, those things were a little bit nerve-wracking, having the cameras on and not having spoken in a year. That was all on my mind. But the main thing that was on my mind was that I wanted to do the cause justice, because it's not often that a vegan gets to talk about veganism live on national television. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to do the cause justice. So that's why I spent that 10 days trying to figure it out, what I was going to say, you know, to get it really right and really kind of cover it all as best I could in just a few minutes. So, I mean, I was nervous, but because I'd never been on TV before, I'd never even really been in front of a camera before. But the bottom line was that was going to be the best thing to raise awareness for animals. And although I, you know, a big part of me did not want to be there on TV doing that, a far more important part of me said, you know, this is the best way to raise awareness for them. And that's what I just kept in mind. And after that interview, I received messages from people all over the world, like countless messages constantly for weeks from people who, you know, never thought of it like that. Many people saying they wanted to go vegan now after just that 3-minute interview. And, I mean, it was all worth it. You know, the whole vow of silence was worth it to be able to go and express that thought and that, you know, what I'd put together to end my vow on. It was all worth it just for that 3-minute moment.
Okay, now let's back up even further. What was it that made you go vegan?
I went vegetarian for a week after meeting someone who told me that eating animals is bad karma. And he was a very, very wise man. So I thought, well, there's probably something to it. And I'd been a personal trainer for 8 years. And after, I thought, okay, it's bad karma. You could be right. I don't want that for myself. I want good karma. So obviously I'll just go vegetarian just for my own personal benefit. But then I felt so amazing after just a few days of just cutting flesh from my diet that I decided there must be something to it. So I looked into it. You know, I started researching more and more because I expected to feel so weak and tired and, you know, just all the usual wrong beliefs you think, like, you know, you need meat for energy and blah, blah, blah. So I started looking into it because I felt so good and I thought, what's going on here? And then I learned you know, not only can it be healthy, I mean, I'd always believed there's no such thing as a healthy vegetarian after a mentor of mine in the health industry told me that. So I start looking into it and I realize you're reducing your chance of heart disease and cancers and diabetes and osteoporosis and obesity, and you're increasing your longevity. And I just thought, what? Like, how did I not know about this? You know, this is shocking that not only can it be healthy, but it's healthier. And then through learning more and more about the health side of things, I started coming across the things that happen to animals before they become this neatly wrapped package on the supermarket shelf. And I decided, well, hang on a second. I'm no animal lover by any means, but I know when something is wrong when I see it. I know injustice when I see it. I know oppression when I see it. And this is not something I'm okay with. So, yeah, I'm no animal lover, but this, you know, I don't despise animals. I don't hate animals. And what I was seeing done to animals is something I wouldn't even want done to my worst enemy. And I had a whole new reason to be a vegetarian then for the animals. And then looking into it further and further, because I was just blown away by all of this. You know, how have I never thought of this before? And I start learning it's not just about flesh, it's about eggs and dairy and leather and places like that exploit animals for entertainment and products that test on animals or contain animal products and all these things, right? And I thought, it's not just about flesh, it's about all the ways we use animals. All animal use is abuse and it's all wrong. And all of a sudden, you know, I heard about veganism before. A little bit. I had one friend who was vegan. I didn't really know anything about it. My friend came to me and told me one day that Grant has gone vegan, and I was like, "What's that?" And he said he doesn't sit on leather couches anymore. That's what they told me about veganism. I'm like, "What the hell is that about? That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard." So that's all I really knew about it. But in my research, I started seeing vegan pop up more and more. And I didn't think it was a moral obligation of mine. I thought it was just more of a lifestyle choice, because I thought, why would we not need to also use all those other things? I didn't understand there was cruelty in a glass of milk. I didn't understand there was cruelty in eggs. And after learning more and more, I decided, hang on, you know, veganism is actually not as extreme as I once thought. In fact, when did not wanting to exploit and kill animals become the extreme way of living?
I think maybe that is not extreme.
Yeah, what's extreme is saying you love animals and you're against animal cruelty you're paying people to mutilate and torture and slaughter them for food and products that we don't need. What's extreme.
I wanted to say, when you were talking about not being an animal lover, I'm not an animal lover either. I don't live with non-human animals. I don't have a problem with those who do. It's just not something for me. But many people who do live with dogs and cats and birds and turtles and whatever, and they say they're such an animal lover, they don't think twice about what's on their plate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that doesn't make any sense at all. Okay, we just have like 3 minutes left. What do you eat, James? What things do you like to eat?
Oh, mate. I mean, for breakfast, I have banana ice cream every morning when I can, when I'm available, which means, you know, this is the best thing I learned, the best recipe I learned when I went vegan. You freeze a few bananas, then you put them in a blender, add a splash of almond milk or rice milk or oat milk or soy milk or coconut milk or whatever plant-based milk that didn't kill any cows. You splash that in over your frozen bananas and you blend it, and you've got banana ice cream. You throw in some berries with that, a bit of peanut butter or something. Delicious. I really love rice paper rolls with tofu, like marinated tofu in there. Mm-hmm. And I love potatoes. I eat so many potatoes, those big sweet purple potatoes. I like the Hawaiian potatoes. I have brown rice with like stir fry veggies, or with a curry. I love Mexican food. I love tacos. I love burritos. What else do I love? I don't know. Like I eat better food now than I ever have. I eat such good vegan food now. And I love my food. I just wanted to touch quickly, if we've got time, on one thing you just said, that sure. People don't think about where their food comes from. And that's so true. And that's the way, I mean, it's not our fault. We've been born into this world where exploiting and killing animals is the norm, where loving these animals like dogs and dolphins and cats is normal, and killing and eating pigs, cows and chickens and fish is normal. That's the norm. We've been born into this. It's not our fault that we've been conditioned to think this way. But the good news is that we can easily change. And, I mean, as Einstein said, those who have the privilege to know have the duty to act. And by acting, you are not only helping animals, you're helping yourself. You're reconciling something inside of yourself that was at first a conflict with one of your core values, a core value of nonviolence. You can reconcile that and become a more kind, peaceful, loving, compassionate, respectful person by going vegan.
Wow. What a mouthful, and a good one. And I agree. It may be naive, but I think it's the way to solve all the world's problems. And once we realize we don't need to exploit animals, non-human animals, then we don't need to exploit human animals, and we don't need to exploit, and then we find ourselves in a very peaceful place.
And the world has a lot of potential, and the more peace we increase, you know, the better things will be. It starts with each and every one of us. This isn't something happening in another country. This isn't something we have no control over. This is something we have total control over. What we put in our mouth, what we wear, what products we use, this is something we have total control over. And together we can make this world a far better place.
Woo-hoo! Amen to that, oh, yeah. James. Thank you. That's it was right. Such a delight to talk to you. And I'm glad you're on the planet. Thanks for doing what you're doing down under in Australia. We need you there. Thank you.
That's right. If anyone wants to check out my stuff online, you can go to James Aspey, which is Aspey, jamesaspey.com.au. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on YouTube. So check it out and send me an email. Say hi as well.
James Aspey, it's a delight. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much for having me on your show.
Okay.
Keep up the good work.
Okay, I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com and email me at info@realmeals.org, and have a delicious week.